I remember back when I was studying teleworking as my thesis for my master's.
He actually did that.
Exam. Yeah, I did actually finish college, and it was my thesis on teleworking. And look at me now, I'm working from home.
A work of a programmer is valuable.
It's not cheap. I know, I hire programmers. You know, we have supercomputers in our hands. I mean, iPhones and some really, really hot Android machines. all these videos, YouTubes, and now we have drones, and actually consumers like us can write the Father Christmas a nice letter and get a drone under the Christmas tree. So,
yeah.
Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is The Podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do day by day working on our app, Nosby.
Or whatever else comes to our minds.
And in this episode, we continue working on the inevitable. So, we'll try this. In the last episode, we started talking about the lots of things mentioned and technologies mentioned in Inevitable, in the book Inevitable by Kevin Kelly. And today we'll try to dig a little bit deeper into some of the concepts, especially the ones that we have most things to say and most value to add for you. So, and maybe to fight a little bit and quarrel. discuss some ideas.
Which is what we love doing the most in here.
Exactly.
Yeah. So just to recap, The Inevitable is a book that tries to present technological trends that are likely to drive the future and many changes in technology and how we do things, how the world works.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that the author tries not to he doesn't have the crystal ball, so he doesn't know exactly how it's going to roll out or when it's going to roll out. But but judging from what's happening, he's totally right that lots of these concepts that he's sharing are just inevitable. They're just going to happen, whether we like them or not. They're just going to happen. This is how the world is going to be at some point.
Yeah, that's what I appreciate about the book. There is another book that I read this year, which is called Industries of the Future, which also tried to predict the future a little bit, but it was focused on areas of growth, areas where there's a lot of things happening fast that can grow to be really big. And here, Kevin Kelly tried to present trends. So he tried to notice things which have a lot of momentum, which are driven by technology, and extrapolate from that to see trends which are probably inevitable. And then he gave specific examples of how this could play out, but I appreciated that he was quite clear on that the exact implementation of this future is unknowable and might turn out to be in many different ways, but the broad trends, in the broad strokes, here are I think it was 12 major technological trends that are pretty much inevitable in one way or another.
So which concept do you want to start with?
I think there was a lot of interesting things about sharing, about cooperation, about open source, about people, working together, creating a hive mind, things like that.
All right. For me, the whole sharing economy, this is something, this is the first thing that comes to my mind, and something that, the Ubers of the world or the Airbnbs of the world started. This idea that that things are no longer idle. So I remember back when I was studying teleworking as my thesis for my master's.
He actually did that.
Exam. Yeah, I did actually finish college, and it was my thesis on teleworking. And look at me now, I'm working from home. Mm. So I remember a statistic there that 80-something% of energy used by offices are used when they're not, when there's nobody there, like or 70, like there was like a big percentage of energy is being, you know, used. And if you think about it, it's true. I mean, like lots of, I mean, now people are turning off lights sometimes, but, and we have LED, but back in the 2000s, I mean, this was not, I mean, like offices would really use lots of energy to just maintain, you know, the air conditioning, you know, the computers, everything, even if people were not there. And I was surprised that they are there and nobody's using them. But now when we look at our cars or our houses, very often they're also idle. Like my car right now is in my, you know, garage and it's standing still. It's not being used. I'm going to use it in an hour when I go and pick up my girls from school. But it's their idle. Like for, and for the whole day, it was there, standing, doing nothing. And what I like about this sharing economy from my perspective is this idea that we start really using things. And if the things become idle, they can be shared between other people and then can be used anyway. And the same goes with homes, like with Airbnb, which I really like, that we use them when somebody's not there. And actually, my first Airbnb experience was when the family that just left the house, they went on vacation and we went there, you know, to spend time in their home, because they were out. And it was a little bit creepy because they had everything there. Like it was somebody's house, right? But on the other hand, it was this cool thing that the house would be standing empty for a week and it wasn't because we were there. So, and from what we see, the technology will enable us to share more and to own less maybe, but especially to share more. People, and also it's the thing of psychology. People are not used to like sharing things together, but they start to embrace this. And I mean, first was the technology, and then the technology kind of provoked that people started changing their minds about actually sharing stuff.
And that's just one example of this broader trend. Another example would be open source or Wikipedia. Like there's people, like it's incredible. Like programmers are well-paid workers, right? It's the work of a programmer is valuable.
It's not cheap. I know. I hire programmers.
Yeah, that's right. And yet here we have like so many people just, you know, doing work for free, and just sharing stuff they made into the world, sharing the code they made into the public, and that's just weird and interesting. And I get it. I get open source. I make open source. I use open source. I'm a programmer. Like it's natural to me in a way that open source is a thing that exists. But when you think about it, it just makes no sense. It's impossible. Or Wikipedia is the same. Like the most, like whatever you think of Wikipedia, of course it's not perfect. Of course there's flaws. Of course you don't have like the editor which can make sure the quality is consistent, blah 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 blah. And yet Wikipedia is the, you know, almost surely the most comprehensive. What's Wikipedia? What the word Wikipedia is coming from? See, it's so obvious. I even forgot what it used to be called. An encyclopedia.
Yeah,
that's it. See,
I mean, actually, like when you look at the history, Encyclopedia Britannica, which was then the knowledge and the source of knowledge, when Wikipedia was born, they laughed at it. They didn't understand. I mean, they knew in their ignorance that this will not work. This can't work in a real world where people will just be editing their own stuff and will be sharing, and there will be lots of misunderstanding there and whatnot. And and then they closed the doors of their home business because Wikipedia was up to date all the time and was faster up to date because it was. I remember that there was a. When I was on a meetup, and there was somebody from Wikipedia, from unofficial staffers from Wikipedia. He was like a project manager in Wikipedia, in the company kind of organization, let's say. And he was explaining how Wikipedia works, and he gave this analogy that when you give a knife to people, they can either kill themselves or they can, you know, build something with it. And mm-hmm. they chose to build something Ouch. With it. And apparently this works. And now we know it works. And now Wikipedia is one of our like main sources of knowledge.
That's exactly right. And yet, like, it's amazing that it can possibly exist, that there are people out there who would do it. But in some important sense, the world is much better off that open source and Wikipedia are things that exist. Like, I can't imagine, like, it's so obvious to me that Wikipedia is a thing. I use it all the time. Like, it's in my Safari web browser, it's command one opens Wikipedia. Like, you know, I can't imagine Wikipedia not existing. Like, imagine someone, you know, and no one like me, like us, a small company like us, doing anything interesting, anything of note, without all the tools, all the infrastructure that was built for us. That's just there, open source, for free, just available, and available for us to change it and tweak it and make it better and improve for our own purposes.
With the open source, there is the thing that people like to do things, like to build things, also for, as you said, people who are well paid, they like to do things also pro bono for different reasons. For reasons like to be connected with other people, to be connected with other smart people, to exchange ideas, like we do on this podcast. So in the open source world, it's amazing how this works together. How somebody creates something, puts it up, especially now on GitHub, and then they get pull requests. People join in, and something, you know, magical happens. And now in 2016 and beyond, when you think about all these services that are available, then it's like to build a new service, to build new something, it's actually like Lego bricks. You just choose different open source libraries and glue them together, and you have and you can build something amazing without actually writing too much code. This, I remember, you know, back in the day when I started Nosby, I was already blown away by what's out. But now it's just increasingly so. I mean, you know, just the other day we talked about it in our dev team about all the JavaScript libraries that are available right now. There are just too many. You don't know, you know, which one to choose to build something. For me, also, the open source thing is another proof that our NoOffice working actually works. People say, no, you cannot, you know, work on complicated projects together when you're not in the same place. But this happens all the time with open source. Yeah. These people haven't seen each other. Yeah, but
that's
like, seriously, and they are building sophisticated operating systems. They are building really sophisticated stuff, which is open source, but you cannot say it's, you know, not worth anything. Actually, it's just amazing stuff. And totally remote.
I'm glad you mentioned this, because it's really amazing. Like, relatively little of open source out there is actually, you know, created by people who work side by side. Like, you mentioned Linux. Like it's a massive open source project, and like, we rely on it. The whole world lives on Linux. Without Linux, we'd be screwed.
Yeah, there will be no servers, nothing. I mean, you know, we rely on these technologies all the time, and it's a very big project, and there are many amazing big projects like that. And it's not just one Linus Torvalds who just, you know, is a genius and doing... No, there are just thousands of people working on it. They haven't seen each other at all. Not like we got... I mean, we at least have a reunion every half a year. They don't. You know, but they still work amazingly together.
Yeah, and like at our company, the vast majority of it is in a single time zone, right? We have our Slack. We sometimes do video or audio calls. Like, we have our pyramid of communication. Link in the show notes. But here, like of course there's Linux conferences and blah blah blah. But like, pretty much the whole work, the real work, is completely asynchronous. All of them via email, and it works. you can do it. It really works.
Now that's why this whole open source thing and as you said, and this idea that people want to share this, they want to share what they've built, they mm-hmm. and also not just to be recognized and to like for some other reasons, but also to that they know that okay, I started this, but I'm sure somebody smarter can just, you know, put something on top of it and just make it even better.
That's exactly right. Actually, the biggest single reason why people do open source is because they want to make their own damn software better. You know, people don't do it because they have to, but because they need the result too. Like, yeah, like people do open source because they want to learn something. They want to create something to learn. And if they're going to make it for themselves to learn and not get paid for it, they might as well put it on GitHub. Like, why not put it on GitHub? Or like, yeah, like some people, you know, want to get some recognition, want to like blog about stuff, be on conferences, and open source is one way people do it. But like mostly people, like a lot of open source projects are actually taken care of by companies or teams because it's a tool they need. But the tool itself, they're not going to make money on it. It's not their business. Like say Facebook. Facebook does a lot of open source tools, right? Yep. And people contribute because people want to make their own stuff better, and they help Facebook for free. But like, but Facebook needed that tool also, and since they're not going to sell the tool, and there's nothing proprietary about the tool, and they could use free help and share it with the world, I guess why not?
Yeah.
But it's still pretty amazing because it's a way of thinking that for people in the software world now seems natural. But you know, not that long ago, you know, just 20 years ago, it would be hard to imagine. Like very few people would think of doing open source. Like it made no sense. Like why would you do work for free like that?
Yeah, but also I think sometimes we don't believe in people that much. I mean, people are really good, you know, in like really mostly, and people want to share. They want to help others. I mean, people want to help, and this is a form of helping yourself by publishing something and getting help from, as you said, for free from somebody else, but also helping mm-hmm. others by sharing something which somebody might find useful, and people want to do it, you know, and it's like. The other day, it's a big stretch, but anyway, it's a good story. So the other day, somebody told me because I am the class representative of my daughter's class, so I'm actually you know helping the parents and to contact the school and everything, and I do some management things for them. And some of them said, you know, Michael, maybe we should pay you because you do so much for us. And I'm like, you wouldn't be able to afford me. so appreciate that I'm doing it for free for you guys, because if I was to charge for this, you would never hire me for this job, because my hourly rate is very expensive.
that's you know, smooth humble brag.
Exactly. But that's what I want to say, that these brilliant programmers from Facebook, I mean, they're really brilliant programmers who are earning lots of money, you know, and they're like top of the top of the top. But I think one of the ways they one of the perks for them that they work for Facebook is the fact that they will work on these cool technologies that will be open sourced, and it will put their name on there, and they will be able to participate in these ambitious projects, right?
Yeah, I personally know people who work or used to work at Facebook doing these open source projects.
You see? I mean, that's the thing, you know, because it benefits Facebook, it benefits them. It's, you know, everybody's happy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But it's when we talk about sharing in the context of this book, it's important to, and I guess that might be obvious, but it's important to explain why is it happening? Why is it a trend that is shaping today and is shaping the future? Because like, why is it happening now and not in the past? So the reason is technology, is the internet, and is the fact that we can do like microtransactions. Like imagine doing a Wikipedia, right? In a world where you would have to send articles and corrections and like your redactions via, you know, postal mail or something like that, or in a world where you know, very few people had access to the internet, or it would be very expensive, or something like that, or imagine like doing an Uber or an Airbnb where the cost of the transaction, right, of managing this would be huge. It would not work. There would be no way for it to work. But when a cost of these transactions, whether monetary as with Uber and Airbnb and these kinds of things, or just other kind of sharing with open source or Wikipedia or social media, you know, your Facebooks and Instagrams and Twitters and YouTube, is that when it's essentially like free, aside from your time, to connect to each other, then suddenly it's possible. It's not just the natural resistance to sharing your stuff or doing something for free or sharing your life on Twitter. It's also that it would be impossible in the past, and now it's free.
I mean, the barrier of entry, I think, it's just so low. It's just so easy. I mean, you know, we have supercomputers in our hands. I mean, iPhones and some really, really hot Android machines. the hottest of the Android machines. So we have really supercomputers in our hands, and we can share instantly. We can use them instantly for all these things. This wasn't before. I mean, this wasn't possible before. I mean, right now the iPhone is as powerful as a laptop. You know? Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. I mean, I remember when Periscope launched. I don't know if it's that popular anymore. I don't see that many Periscopes anymore.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, but this idea that anybody can be a broadcaster, you know, like anybody can be a broadcaster. It's amazing. It's like giving this power to the people even more. You don't have to be like a TV station with this equipment and just to be there on the spot. If there is something happening, chances are there is somebody with a smartphone there to broadcast it to the entire mm-hmm. world. And this is something that I think is also enabling. So the internet, as you said, and also this fact we have these supercomputers, and they'll just get smaller and more powerful with each year. So this trend is indeed inevitable.
Yeah. There's interesting point in the book about you know, extrapolating this trend into the future. Like, how far does this get us? Like, how much can we have people just, you know, build these hive minds of people just collaborating with each other to create things like open source, like Wikipedia, like all sorts of these things, or how much people are willing to share and then subscribe to, or you know, like with Airbnb and Uber, or how much people are willing to share of their lives and create media socially. And we don't know, of course, but it's probably farther than we might think right now. And there was an interesting analogy to how, you know, to capitalism. You know, how, you know, at the beginning, where we the society kind of doubled down on capitalism, we were kind of surprised at how well it worked. There's an example of the postal service, right? In many countries, maybe most countries, I don't know, like it, there would be a government-controlled monopoly postal service. Right, and it seemed to make a lot of sense. Like, why have many postal services? Like, it's stupid, right? Like, why would you do that? It's more efficient to just have one that covers the whole country. But then we let companies compete, and it turned out to be much better. And I know we saw that in Poland as this these restrictions on the postal service monopoly were loosened up, and competitors came, and it turned out to be better. and cheaper and more reliable and whatnot. Also driving the government postal service to be better. And so now we are experimenting with these kinds of things. Like, with open source, you know, it's interesting. Like how much of the things we create can we actually just open source so that everybody can see them and take advantage of it and use whatever way they want? Or like, how much can we, have people contribute together for free to create amazing things like Wikipedia, or how, you know, like Craigslist, you used to pay local newspapers to like make your classifieds there, and then there was Craigslist, and it's pretty much free, and just people create this place where you can find stuff that people offer, and in many ways it's much better. And it's just interesting to see, you know, how many things that now seem impossible, just like open source and or YouTube or Wikipedia seemed impossible, are actually very reasonable.
Yeah, totally. I just almost drifted here listening to you and listening to you and thinking about where it got us and where I don't see it stopping, you know, at any point in the future now. I mean, it's just going to be more and more. And for me, the big question is a little bit about the privacy, if we share too much, you know, when sharing is too much, and when we don't control it anymore and just share it compulsively and then regret it, you know. So I think one thing is sharing for the good, to improve lives, like what you mentioned. But on the other hand, it's also sharing just because you want to share, you want to expose, and you want to be exposed, and you think it's okay, and you don't realize what this can, you know, bring in the future.
And how about this other angle for sharing, which is how behind a lot of these things, there's still companies making lots of money when you are not. Like how about this other more cynical view of Uber and Airbnb, where people are, it's not sharing economy, it's sharing the scraps economy. I've heard someone describe it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you're sharing it because like you're not paid enough in your actual job, or like this is the only thing you can do to like get by. Like, you know, that's another way of looking at it, and it's part of it too. It's in some ways inseparable. It's the good and the bad. Like there's Uber is a great service from a consumer perspective. Using Uber is much better than using a taxi, and yet, you know, people with whom I spoke who were driving these Ubers were like, this is not a good way to make a living, right? And yet here they are, and they're not actually even employed by Uber. They're these contractors, and you know, in some ways, like there's cases where it's fine, where you're fine with that. That's what I want. I want to do something on the side. But in many cases, it's not fun. It's just like the way for you to survive, or like, you know, with other things like it's a weaker comparison. But with open source, like one cynical view of many of it is that. Especially depending on the exact licensing that's attached to an open source project, like, well, you're just doing work for free for a bigger corporation. I in the end, it's not you who are deriving value from it. It's still the big guys.
Yeah, I think we're getting too down here. Also, getting to the black, you know, the black scenarios here.
It's a difficult subject because it's, you know, if it was black or white, then it would be easy to discuss. But it's that's the interesting nuance here, that like some of it is inevitable, but then some of it is like, ooh, that's That's interesting. Here are the really rough edges that we as like as a society we have to be careful about, because like here are some things about this whole sharing thing which are kind of can be kind of creepy or can be bad if they're misused or if they kind of get out of hand.
Yeah, but I would segue now from this sharing thing to actually remixing. So a concept that, you know, it's sharing still, like all these videos, YouTubes, and now we have drones, and actually consumer like us can, you know, can write a Father Christmas a nice letter and get a drone under the Christmas tree. So
yeah,
I mean, this is literally my letter to Father Christmas. I want to get a drone. Anyway, let's leave this for the Christmas episode. So the thing is that we have people remixing things. So recording videos, recording, shooting pictures, and then also remixing them together, remixing them with videos, with trailers, which you don't like because they're spoilers, which so you can do lots of things with video. And I've been using my iPhone as my video editing studio for the last, I don't know how many years, because even with iPhone 4S, I was using the iMovie and I was editing and creating videos on the iPhone itself. So we can do all these things.
They were not that good though.
Nobody asked you for opinion. So the thing is that the law is not ready for it. And they are still trying, the copyright law and everything, they're still trying to catch up and they're trying to punish people. And and YouTube, if you put a wrong soundtrack on your video and you upload it to YouTube, actually YouTube will either get rid of your video or will remove the soundtrack from the video because there is this unauthorized use of the soundtrack from BMG or whoever owns the rights to it. And I remember Lawrence Lessig had a very prominent law professor. He had a very nice presentation on remixing, and all this. And he also mentioned in his presentation that this is inevitable. I mean, they can try with copyright law and banning and whatnot, but it's inevitable. The generations to come will be used to remixing ideas, to remixing things, and. And the law will have to catch up. So you can defend it all you want. But at some point, because people want to share, they want to share, and they want to share these connections between different pieces of content and video and audio and everything, they will be remixing. And this will be their like the way of expression, actually.
Oh, yeah. Like you're talking about videos, and it applies to so many things. Another like obvious example with media or with like art would be music. Like a big part of the music I listen to are of genres that are in some ways remixes and iterations of like combining genres that came before, and like half if not more of these songs rely more or less heavily on sampling, you know, using samples from here and samples from there, and then there's this catchy fragment from this song, and there's this thing playing in the background, and you're creating something amazing, right? But it would not be possible if you were starting from scratch, if you could not remix. And mostly sampling is a practice that's well established and fine in the music industry, but then there were like interesting like lawsuits with big artists when like big money starts being involved, and then like no, sampling is not so good because intellectual property.
Yeah, but again, this is for me like the perfect idea of something that is just inevitable and it's coming. I mean, you can try to stop it all you want, but there is no way for you to stop it.
All right, but how about we bring it to our playground? Like, how about software? How about software patents? Like software is all about remixing. Like, it's like part of it is again sharing open source, but that's different. That's fine. Like, it's open source, right? But then like. We take ideas from all over the place. It's just that's how software is made. Like, it's not made in a vacuum. We learn these, like, oh, that's an interesting idea. That's an interesting design pattern. Here's a structure that makes sense. Here's a wording that's, like, really, really clever. And then that app, like, I really like this little piece. And then, like, you gather, you learn those little bits and pieces, and you combine them, remix them together into something that's completely different, completely new and great. But then there's software patterns, and they're weird.
No, they're not weird. No. Stop. They're just plain stupid. They're just retarded. They shouldn't exist anymore. I mean, the fact that they still exist, for me, it just blows my mind. I mean, why? They're just so not, you know, meant for this. I mean, this is one of the scariest thing of actually having a company in the US that has some success, because then there's going to be a patent troll, like a company that tells you that they own a patent for sharing messages through communications channels, you know, and they sue you because you are doing the same thing, kind of. Like, this is so stupid.
And of course you can try to challenge it, but we all know how lawsuits, how law works in the US.
Exactly. I mean, in the US, as far as I know, you can sue anybody for almost anything and you'll probably win. So, and this is what happens with the patents. And even if they don't win, they're going to win because they're going to just drive you down. So, so for me, this is something that is totally ridiculous and totally also inevitable that the software patents will have to go away, because we've been remixing things like for decades now in software industry. And that's the thing. People use our application Nosby, not because we were so genius about rediscovering task management, project management. You know, we are the ones who just came up with this brilliant idea. No, we remixed them in a way that fits our lifestyle, fits our way of working. And we got feedback from other customers, and we remixed their feedback with our idea, and then people are using it now. They're just using our remix, our version of a task management, project management thing that can work and help you get things done. So, and this is how it's supposed to work. So if suddenly somebody wants to sue me because they have the patent for a task in a software package that goes through the cloud, I'm going to be laughing like crazy, because this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, but and of course, we both know software patents are mostly just complete BS. But there's also this more nuanced part, that intellectual property, this whole notion of intellectual property is weird. And it's difficult to wrap my head around it, because it's not obvious. Like, what... Like, here's the thing. It's the whole word intellectual property, in some sense, doesn't make sense, because a property is something that you cannot copy. If I took your house, you wouldn't have your house. But if you share with me a concept, an idea you had, now we both have the idea. And so, like, it's kind of weird, because it's not about, oh, it's just anarchy, like, let's all, like, do whatever we want. Let's just have someone, like, steal our code base and also call themselves Nosby, and it's fine. Like, no, it wouldn't be, right? But what exactly is fine and isn't, it's kind of a thing that we just don't really know. Like, it's very hard to define where the line is.
Oh, yeah.
Because we understand, okay, sampling is cool, you know, remixing, like, ideas from everywhere to create new software products is okay, but, like, where is this point where you take something and like pull it into your own thing, your own product, your own song, your own video, like, with, but it's not okay, but you just cloned it to enough precision. What's the precision at which it's not okay, and it's very akin to stealing, and where it is okay because you are remixing? It's very weird and unclear.
Yeah, it's very hard to say, because, like, it's usually, I think usually it goes to this kind of gut feeling or something, you know, that at some point you're just like, okay, yeah, this was too much, or, like, it's really hard to say. You're right.
Yeah, I agree. It it usually, when you show the example, it usually feels pretty obvious, like what's okay and what's not okay. But this nuance is not yet embedded in the law.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. That's something that eventually will have to change, because we're in this weird gray zone where a lot of things is just, you know, it ends up, if no one's going to sue you, then it's fine. And if they're going to sue you, well, it just depends about the judge, about like how good of a lawyer you have, how much money you have to spend on it. Like, and obviously it's usually in the US, which is a whole another story. So like it's very unclear in the law about what's okay and what's not okay.
Yeah, but sometimes in this economy that we have, the sharing economy, the internet information age, the judge is the user, is the customer. So sometimes when you just get the bad press because somebody just sees, you know, this guy just, you know, made a blatant copy of this and this, you know, mm-hmm. and you don't need the judge. Like that you will have you will be not respected, you know, and of course you
might get. But I think like right now there's more danger on the other side, how you know, like the music industry, like giants, you know, corporations, mm-hmm. Abuse their power because they can, within the realm of law, argue that you stole their intellectual property.
Yeah.
And for you, it seems totally reasonable. Like, okay, I just, you know, I remixed this. I took part of an idea and made it something completely different. But yet, we still see those things, again, with patent trolls, with... there's a lot of stuff of the music industry, you know, stuff like that, which is still happening. And that has to change.
Yeah. Or just like the recent example of how Instagram just copied the Snapchat stories and made it Instagram stories without actually thinking too much about it.
Yeah, but see, like here is the gray zone. Like, did they really copy it? Like, yeah, they totally in some sense, like it's obvious that Snapchat was the inspiration, and both Instagram and Facebook Messenger did that. But is it the same? Is it stealing? I think it is. It's they did remix the idea and like made it into something different. Like it's not as if they just cloned Snapchat and, you know, called it Snap Video or whatever. And like it's different, but yet it's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, for once, I mean, they didn't call it Snapchat Stories, they called it Instagram Stories. So like, they were really original right there.